Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. Join Dave and his guests now as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles and New York City and Manhattan and beautiful Hawaii, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver at All Positive Talk Radio, HealthyLife.net. We're coming to you live. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver at CaregiverDave.com, along with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg, at thecaregiverspace.org. And we are coming to you on many, many different global platforms, YouTube, iTunes, Spreaker, SoundCloud, HealthyLife.net, Facebook Live, and a whole bunch of others. And we are so excited to have a wonderful guest for you, Senator Suzy Chun Oakland. See, I got it right.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
How are you?
And we are so happy to have her all the way from Hawaii. And we're going to be talking about caregiving because she is an amazing, amazing person that I met over there. And everyone seems to know her because she is just such a servant. But before I get started with that, I want to thank last week's guest, Peter Rosenberger, author, radio host, caregiver to his wife recently on the 700 Club and the Mike Huckabee Show. And we just are so grateful for all these great guests that we get to have and to help caregivers survive this thing called caregiving and stay alive, because 30% of them actually die before their loved ones do, and the rest of them get sicker, needing a caregiver of their own. So just a reminder, you can listen to that interview and all our interviews on my membership website, caregiverdave.com, or many of the global platforms that I mentioned earlier. Good enough about that. Adrian, welcome back. You were a little under the weather last week. Are you feeling better?
Yes, I was. Yes, I am. Thank you.
Yes, I was. Yes, I am. That's good. Adrian suffers from periodic migraine.
Yes.
Are they just called migraines, or are they called migraine headaches?
They're called migraines or migraine headaches. And in my case, they're chronic, being treated. And from having one a day, I now have like one a month.
Well, that's better.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, you rarely miss. You rarely miss a show, but every now and then.
Every now and then it's a migraine.
It must be really bad. I mean, it's worse than just a headache, right? It's in its own little category.
Yeah.
Right? The difference between clinical depression and just feeling sad, I guess, something similar to that.
Sort of.
Well, welcome to the show, Senator Suzy Wang Oakland Chun. Did I say it right? I'm sorry. I'm going to mess this up.
Chun Oakland.
Chun Oakland.
Chun.
I thought Oakland. I said Wang instead of Chun.
Yes. Which,
yes, I did. Okay. See, I knew I messed up. Well, welcome to the show, Suzy. It was so great meeting you. And I think I met you back in August when I spoke at the Palolo. These Hawaiian names are so fun to say.
Palolo Chinese Home.
The Palolo Chinese Home, which is an amazing.
And you're also a speaker at one of our conferences that I attended prior to that.
Yes, and so much fun there. And it was just a star-studded event. And it's like a pagoda-looking historical building, right? It's a historical landmark, isn't it?
Yes, it's beautiful and has been there for a long time.
Yeah, it looks like something that you would see in China. And it's turned into a senior center or assisted living. I mean, tell us, because you kind of run the place, don't you? Or in
Not
a way?
Not at Palolo Chinese Home. Palolo Chinese Home is run by Darlene Nakayama and a whole very professional staff. I believe it's the residential home for seniors of all cultural and ethnic backgrounds. Wow. There is an adult daycare center. They do a lot of actually training, have people from various educational institutions volunteer and intern with them. But they have a full staff that does anywhere from residential to meal preparation to, you know, going on excursions, having people come and perform at their Palolo Chinese home, et cetera. They provide an array of long-term care services.
That's a whole bunch of more services than we have out here. That's an amazing place. How big is it?
Yes.
Is it on how many acres? It looks huge.
It is a very large parcel of land, and I don't know the history behind it, but I know that it was created by concerned community folks and has been there, I believe, over 100 years.
Yeah.
I actually head up a program within Catholic Charities Hawaii called Lana Kila Multipurpose Senior Center. And that is a center that actually supports active aging activities. We have 1,600 members that come throughout the year. And we have currently 44 different kinds of classes, from Tai Chi to brain exercises to computer, iPhone, iPad workshop, dance, music, singing, all kinds of different things, plus 7 cultural clubs that celebrate different cultures and that everyone actually participates in, no matter what their background is.
And wow.
Are these without charge, these classes?
Yes, our membership is free. We serve the island of Oahu, although what I've been finding is people that are part-time residents on the island of Oahu from the neighbor islands, as well as other states in the United States, and even some of the other countries where people have come as part-time residents here, are part of our center. That's pretty neat.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like to ask our guests, and I failed to do this. I got distracted. But tell us, Susie, what is the reason you think that you were put on this earth?
Oh, my.
Your purpose and your mission and your destiny.
I just want to make people happy and just make life better for everyone, as well as to take care of the environment and our animals and everybody.
Mm.
So, since I was a little girl, I think I have been serving in that kind of capacity. And of course, my family, my parents and grandparents and great-grandparents were very good role models for that. Mm-hmm.
Well, God bless your parents. They obviously did something right. You turned out just wonderful. And Susie is a very humble person. It's amazing with all she's done. But she actually, I had to argue a little bit with her about coming on the show. She goes, "Oh, I don't have anything to talk about." And someone was telling me her list of accolades, which is like, and I says, "Come on, really?" And I started listing them all down. And so somebody was telling on her. And so she just couldn't get out of it then. You know, she couldn't warm her way out of it.
David's so, very persistent.
No, I just had a lot of, I had a lot of ammunition, that's all. And
thank you for that time.
No problem. And she's introduced me to an amazing poet, which we connected, and she's going to be on the show too, Frances Kakuagwa. Did I say that wrong?
Kakugawa.
Kakugawa.
Kakugawa. And I don't know, did I tell you the poem, that one of the poems she wrote called TikTok, Adrian? Did we do that on the show?
I don't think so.
We got to do that maybe after the break, because I've been just telling that poem everywhere I go to anyone who will listen. And it brings tears to everyone's eyes, including my own. And she's just a very caring person, a very world-famous poet, I would assume. And she has a heart for the elderly and the aging and dementia and Alzheimer's. Did I get that right, Susie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dementia and Alzheimer's is one of those subgroups of types of dementia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about when you first became a senator. Why did you even think about going into politics? I mean, it is so sad. You know, Ben Franklin said, evil men rule when good men do nothing. And unfortunately, I can't imagine anyone wanting to go in politics these days because it's a thankless job. You become a target, for every one of your political enemies. And it's like it's getting harder and harder to, as Rodney King of the LA riots would say, can we all just get along? It's getting hard to even go to a football game now and sit down and enjoy yourself without something becoming political. You know, we used to go to Academy Award parties and everything is political now. Everything has become politicalized. What, now maybe those were the good old days, and they probably were, but what made you decide that politics was something that you were being called to do, Susie?
Actually, I did community service most of my life from a little girl, and it was a number of elected officials that asked if I would consider, and a number of community leaders. I did not think of going into politics. I did get a major in communications and a major in psychology, and then could have had a triple major for political science. University of Hawaii at that time did not offer a triple major. But, I was very much service oriented. And so when I had worked for a senator as a staff member right out of graduating from the University of Hawaii, he wanted someone that really liked to engage with the community. And so he asked me to work for him as a staff member. And then a council member then asked me to serve because he saw me at so many different community gatherings and service projects. And just, I used to just facilitate a lot of meetings among people that may not see eye to eye. But I think that was maybe part of my gift, being able to sit down with a very diverse group of people that may not be friends to begin with, but end up being very good friends, more because of how I facilitate. And they know I value each of their talents and what they can contribute to the community. So they're very forthcoming in trying to problem solve together.
You're a peacemaker and a negotiator.
That's a great attribute.
I don't like people fighting, and I know everyone means well.
Blessed are the peacemakers.
Yeah.
So politics for me was out of that. People asked me to serve, and I finally made a decision. I think it was just a few days before the election, and then I quit my job with city council at that time as a staff person and just walked my district 4 times in 3 months because I wanted to make sure I knew everyone, understood what their concerns were. And when I did get elected into office, every year I walked my district. It took almost the whole year. But that was my way of learning and keeping tabs on what people's concerns were. I would get really great feedback from people in terms of the issues they heard being discussed at the legislature. I could at least represent their concerns in a thoughtful way and give examples of how a new law could impact people either positively or negatively, or if amended, be a better law for everyone. So that I did for 26 years, and it was a lot of fun, but a lot of hard work too.
So what's involved in, quote, walking your district? I mean, how does that work?
Literally, when I was not in elected office, I would sign hold, and at the different street intersections, we have something called sign holding, just to say hi to everyone. That was from 6 to 8 o'clock, and then I would walk from 8 a.m. till 6 p.m. To every door where it was single family homes and every apartment unit that would permit someone to go into their building. Just one mountainside, a level height, took me 3 weeks if I walked 8 hours a day, 7 days a week. And
wow.
That was just a small part of my district. So, yeah, it's literally that, going up the hills, up the stairways to the door and saying hello. And if no one's there, then I would write a note to them just to say, you know, please let me know if you have any concerns. And I gave my phone number, my house phone.
Well, if you were walking for 8 hours a day, when did you have time to legislate?
Well, once I was in office, that was what the four times I walked in 3 months. Once I was in office, I would do that in between my meetings.
Nice.
Or on the weekends or in the evenings. And so that was my time. And then session was officially from January through the beginning of May. So during the legislative interim is where I did a lot of my interim legislative work, but I also walked the district because we're only part-time legislators. But I had made a commitment to be full-time. Actually, it was triple time. I worked 20-hour days, 7 days a week, and took one day off one Christmas during that 26 years.
Wow.
That's the manual on how to become a representative. I mean, that's the old-fashioned way. Isn't that what Alexandra Ocasio did?
Cortez.
She booted out some guy who's been in there for decades and had all these you know, positions and on committees and boom.
Yeah.
And I remember back
I'm thankful for my family because, you know, it's a part-time legislator. So,
yeah.
But I was full-time, and so my family really helped a lot to support that kind of work.
Is it a paid position?
The part-time legislator position is a part-time paid position. So I
probably
know
not worth the hours, probably not making minimum wage.
I made $3.17 is what I calculated per hour.
Especially on those 20-hour days.
I think we got an increase because we kept turning down our pay raises. I finally got a pay increase, so $7 something an hour. I think almost 18 years later. Yeah.
So what percentage of the people would open their doors? Like half?
It depends what time of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So many people that work during the day, and I had an older population, so there were quite a number of people home. But if they were working, I would have to leave something at the doorstep. And in the evening, I only walked from about 6 to 8 because I noticed after a while people were worried about my safety. So they didn't want me to go that late.
And I can see why you've been reelected for 26 years. Back in my small community where I used to live in Burbank, I remember as a teenager, there was this woman who came to the door and says, you know, I'm going to be running for city council. And it was the only person I can remember that knocked on our door and told us what she wanted to do. And we voted for her, and she was voted again and again and again. You know, it's such a rare thing to have people have their finger on the pulse of America and your community, because that's where it starts.
Yes. So that's how I got, to answer your question, though, how I got involved, I think, with the whole issue of caregiving and elders. My focus has been on the family. And so in any way that we can support our family, from the children before they're even born all the way to someone passing away and beyond, actually, you know, supporting families to stay strong and healthy is important. So caregiving was one aspect of that, very important aspect. Hawaii actually has the highest longevity in the nation, or was in that position for decades.
Why do you think that's so?
I think part of it is, you know, we have a really good climate. People are able to be outdoors a lot. The types of diets that we have, a lot of vegetables and fruits, you know, to eat fresh fish. All of that is important. But also, we were the first state to have a prepaid health act passed, which allowed insurance to be, health insurance to be available to over 90% of our population.
Wow. Yeah.
Since 1970s.
Mm.
And so that was not an issue for many people to be able to see a physician or some other health professional. At least we had that kind of coverage if we were working. And if we were retired or children, you know, we'd be covered in some way.
Thank you.
So that, and then our environment, you know, keeping everything clean and pristine, it's getting harder to do so, but we do need to have a clean environment. You know, the water is important, the quality of the water, the quality of the air. I think we still have one of the best types of water in the world, and that I can tell you a whole bunch of things that goes into you know, protecting the environment and not having pollutants in our water sources.
Yeah, I've been there. It's sure better than Flint, Michigan. Listen, we're going to take a break, so don't go away. We will be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships, is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive. To survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. Available everywhere.
And we're back with Senator Susie Chun Oakland from Hawaii. And my co-host, Adrian Gruberg. Hi.
Hi.
Did you miss us? So we're having such a great time talking to her. Let's talk more about how your passion for caregiving came about. You said you started your district that you served for 26 years was an elderly district. Mm-hmm. When did you actually become a caregiver yourself and had to care for one of your own family members?
My dad did for my mom for about 10 years. And recently, with my husband having surgery, he was a part of Desert Storm and started to experience joint issues. And we're not too sure what that's from. But for just a short while, about a year, I was a caregiver recently. But I met literally thousands of caregivers in Hawaii. And each of them shared such I think, inspirational stories about what they did to help their family members, their friends, and their neighbors. So that was very compelling for me as an elected official. And, you know, they were very much willing to share how we could, as a government, but also as a community, be able to support our caregivers better. So I think since 1992 or three, we were trying to create a long-term care umbrella program for our state that would have allowed people to contribute. At that time, I think it was $10 or $20 a month in order to get an array of long-term care services should they need it.
Wow.
And
like an insurance policy.
Yes. And I think at that time we were asked, one of our Hawaii folks, Jeanette, who was the head of our executive office on aging, she was asked by the president at the time to try and develop a national plan. But what she realized was, you know, most states didn't even have a health insurance program, a universal health insurance program like Hawaii, let alone a long-term care program that we were going to tack on. So I know Jeanette Takamura, she said, if Hawaii waited, you know, we'd have to wait a long time for the rest of the nation to be able to have long-term care be a part of any kind of healthcare system. So we kept exploring different ways, and the most recent, I would say, decade was looking at how we can support our caregivers. So we established something called Kupuna Care. Kupuna in Hawaiian means senior or elder, and they are revered very much in our culture. So Kupuna Care was monies that were set aside. We allocated it from the state to all the counties in Hawaii. And then there was contracted services for home-delivered meals, for chore services, for, you know, different kinds of personal care, like hygiene-type things, toileting services, etc. And the money could also be used for respite care, for modifying homes so that people can live as independently as possible, even though their activities of daily living may be limited. So we continue, I know the state legislature continues to be very much supportive of that program. And it's been very helpful for literally thousands of people.
I have a question, Deb. Is there anything that compares with that for people who are not elderly but are chronically ill and younger?
I know that we have a very strong early intervention services program. Before, the nation required early intervention services for children that were born with disabilities. And that has allowed many of our children that had disabilities growing up at least to have services early on, the 0 to 3 age period, so that they would not become wards of the state. Many of them live quite independently as a result of that early intervention and the services that were given to them.
That's
or, you know, to help them with their different needs. But we still have a long way to go, you know, in terms of those that are not 60 years and older. I know long-term care, 40% of everyone needing long-term care are under the age of 60. They've gotten into car accidents, in Hawaii, surfing accidents, all kinds of different things. So that was something that our long-term care proposal back in the 1990s and then in the early 2000s was to address. It was everyone 18 years and older would have the availability of long-term care services for them. And additionally, I think it is important for any state to invest in active aging programs like the one that I'm heading up right now, a senior center, where people can really grow old and healthy until the day they die. They don't ever have to go into long-term care nursing care homes or into, you know, different kinds of adult residential care homes or what have you. They live healthy, active lives because they socialize well with many people. They have exercise built into their, you know, activities throughout the week. They are able to give back through volunteerism to the community. All of that is critical to lead active lives and age well. So it's the whole array of things.
Thank you.
I know we're talking
I think I'm moving to Hawaii.
You should, Adrian.
I just got calls from different states asking. I don't know why they called the senior center, but they wanted to know everything about what we have here.
Well, listen, we're going to take another break. So when we come back, I want to talk more about the future and, you know, Hawaii's $2,500 payments that they're making to certain caregivers under certain conditions. And no other state in the union is doing that. And I want to talk more about
the Kupuna Caregiver Program you're talking about. And it's for adult day care settings.
Yeah. And I want to also talk about what some other countries are doing with dementia patients. They're building communities that are safe and fenced, and it's like it's safe for a dementia patient to walk the streets because it's a controlled environment. It's like one huge facility, but it's outdoors. And I would be shocked if Hawaii didn't go in that direction because they're so cutting edge.
We do have those types of facilities, and our private sector has been partners with us, so I can share with you.
And the Palolo home is almost that kind of a thing.
Yes.
It's so big, and I've seen seniors just kind of wandering around, and it's a safe place to wander because, you know, dementia and Alzheimer's patients, they do like to wander. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
We are a community of caregivers that understands and supports you wherever you are in your journey. We are a place to connect with other caregivers, but more importantly, a place to get practical, actionable help. There are lots of ways for you to get support. First of all, you can download our welcome pack. This will get you started on your Thrive journey. Next, you can ask and get answers to your questions by posting them here in our private Facebook groups. You can also get live online support by attending one of our live weekly Connect webinars. You can get practical, actionable advice by listening to our weekly podcast. You can hear and read other stories about other caregivers' experiences. Plus, add your own in our weekly Share Your Story forum, posted every Tuesday in the Facebook group. You can access essential resources and download practical Thrive Solutions packs, all of which are geared to help you thrive as a caregiver. You can get lifetime access to all of our resources. Again, we are here to support you and help you thrive and to enjoy your life as a caregiver. And remember, this is a place to get hope, not just cope.
And we're back with Senator Susie Chun Oakland and my co-host Adrian Gruberg. And so let's talk about the future and some other cutting-edge ideas like I had mentioned. Tell me more about the dementia environment, for the safe dementia environment for elders that you kind of envision for the state and that might be even be in the, on the drawing board.
I know that there are private sector organizations that have done research. They've gone worldwide and looked at best practices around dementia. There is a gentleman that has created, I think now, four different units or homes that are multi-units, many people with dementia, but he's been able to construct the home-like environment in a way that keeps people with dementia from getting hurt or wandering, as you had mentioned earlier. And he's been able to use the properties that he's purchased to landscape it in a way and, you know, have physical type barriers, fencing that's not only beautiful and feels spacious, but is safe for patients with dementia. We have different state facilities that are moving in that direction. And I think as the community continues to have positive experiences, at least, you know, our state loves to share things. So we have opportunities through the Hawaii Gerontological Society to share best practices with one another. It's well attended by hundreds of people in different nonprofits, government, and individual type settings, and they share about caregiving experiences as well as what they're doing in their line of work to address various forms of dementia. But I wish you could. If you go on, I think there's a website that one of the gentlemen has created. It's called Hale Kuike, Hale, and then Kuike. But I believe you'd be able to see what kind of home-like setting has been created with some of the best practices that were learned about as he went throughout the world. Because he's even developed furniture.
Is that Hale Kuike?
Kuike.
One more time.
Hale. Hale. And then Kuike. Kuike.
Just like it
and
sounds.
And if you go on that site, you'll see some of the... Hale means house. Kuike, I'm not too sure. But it's beautifully done, and he has it in different parts of the island of Oahu. But that, to me, is one of the better kinds of residential facilities.
That's
Palolo
amazing.
Chinese home you mentioned. And, you know, there are many. There's even, I know that there was a question about those that are under 60 years old. There's something called Hele Mano Plantation. And this lady, Susanna Chung, basically helps people with severe developmental disabilities when they're children. And she was told back then, because she's been in this kind of work for decades, she was told that the lifespan of these children would be 18 years old. They are now 60 and 70 years old.
Yep.
So she's dealing with things like menopause for the females.
Oh.
And she searched worldwide to see if there are others, you know, that are severely disabled, developmentally disabled. And there really isn't any other program that she knows of that's dealing with these older adults now who were not expected to live that long.
Right.
So that is another place she's developed housing, not only for the now adults, but for the adult parents who are aging. And, you know, they would be in nursing care facilities and separated, which she did not want to happen to the family unit. So she's been able to develop a continuum so that the family can stay together, or at least be able to stay together for most of their lives. Mm-hmm. And she has
I'm going to Hawaii, Adrian, when I need care. Because
well,
the climate
hopefully with
is
all
perfect.
The knowledge you're sharing on your show, you know, it'll inspire others throughout the rest of the United States.
I hope
to
so.
Do things like that. Because, you know, many folks, they like to stay in their homes, wherever they're living.
With their
that
families
the
or?
Of,
that's
yes.
the first choice.
And
yeah.
that's the preference of most people needing care. They want to be at home. So
yeah,
to the extent that we can share all these examples, I'm sure the kinds of talent and creativity across the nation can do these types of things and more. And hopefully they will share it with all of us, you know, when they find models that work.
How's the Kapuna bill going? I mean, I was told that they offer $1,500 a month, and they only had enough money in the beginning for like 30 caregivers, and then
Right.
they
It was a
renewed it for
pilot.
another year. Did it
Yes.
get more money the second?
I know that the advocates are asking for more money. I do know that the legislature always has other things that they also need to address, like we had
Sure.
flood and storms that really put out
They're
a
always
lot of people
competing for
with no
money, yeah.
home. Right.
Right. But I think the Kupuna caregiver bill, which is what you're talking about,
Yeah.
at least is showing promise because there are so many caregivers that are still working caregivers. They have to go to work and then
Yeah.
caregive at the same time.
That
And you
usually
want people to
disqualifies
stay in
many.
that. Right. So this allows people that are working caregivers at least to have some income to have their loved ones in an adult daycare center where they can socialize. They will have attentive staff that can engage them in all kinds of activities that keep them healthy and alert. So I hope that the legislature will see value over the, I would say next 3 years. Normally, even for any kind of business, it takes a while for it to be developed in a way that is most effective.
Well,
So
have you ever considered a partnership or a co-op with commercial business or corporations to
yes.
perhaps do some kind of a sponsorship, because any great program needs private investment as well, as
Right.
opposed to public investment, because public investment is so limited.
Yes. I think that's a good idea. I know we've done it in the early childhood area where we've offered, we provide some incentive for childcare for a
Yeah,
lot
good
of our
PR
families.
too for the
But the
company.
businesses we ask to, say, provide the actual center space for the children. If
Yeah.
the employers have that kind of facility, that would be great. Otherwise,
Yeah.
what we have in place is private employers also pay. They incent their employees and give a stipend to each of the employees that have that need.
Yeah.
So
Or
I think that's
tax
a good
credits.
idea.
I mean, anything to motivate them,
Yes, that's possible too.
Listen, we're up on another break, so don't go away. We will be right back with our guests.
Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his sixth book entitled It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. Will help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life, and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today, or buy one for your special caregiver, on sale everywhere, and at caregiverscaregiver.com.
And we're back with Senator Susie Chun Oakland and my co-host Adrian Gruberg from the Caregiver Space, and I'm Dave Nassani from caregiverdave.com, and we are talking today about caregiving and dementia and Alzheimer's and just all sorts of creative ideas that the state of Hawaii has come up with that no other state in the union has come up with. And if they can do it, by golly, we can do it also. And so, Adrian, how's this sounding? Are you a believer now? Are you going to join me in Hawaii?
I already said I was. I, of course, I'm interested in not just the elder care part of it, so I'm really glad to hear that there is attention being paid to that big part of the population that's under 60. Yeah, that pleases me a great deal.
Great.
So how are you spending these days, Susie? What is your time filling up with? What are your passions today? And how has your focus kind of been tweaked a little?
When I had decided, now it's 2 years ago, not to run for office, because I felt we had introduced and passed a lot of good laws, and I felt the need to help our community with the implementation of those laws in the area of long-term care, in the area of children's programs, in the area of housing. We have a huge shortage of affordable housing. So that's what I did.
And a lot of homeless as well,
Yes, and, you know, to help in all these different venues. I still am a part of about 100 different working groups that I was involved
wow.
with at the Ledge, and even before that time. So I continue to do the affordable housing, actual building of affordable housing through some of our nonprofits, creating after-school, non-school programs for our children so they can stay safe, first of all, but also explore all their talent and all of their yet unknown kinds of things that make them happy, whether it's going to help them with their future careers, et cetera. A non-school program, non-school hour programs help with that when they're not in school. And then housing, you know, we have a huge shortage. So being able to build for the mix of incomes, because it's not only very low income housing that is not available, it's a whole array. And that's how we affect our seniors as well as those under 60, you know, having a stable place to call their home is extremely important in just the sanity and being able to keep healthy, because you have a home that you can rest and enjoy with others. So, yeah, that's the kind of work I'm doing. I am now the head of Lanikila Multipurpose Senior Center, which was the first senior center in Hawaii, created in 1969 by the state. And then in 1981, the state had asked the nonprofit, Catholic Charities Hawaii, to operate the senior center. So that's what I'm doing, being able to actually implement the things that I've been advocating for.
Yeah.
Examples would be being a food and flower and fern hub, where any nonprofit, actually any government office, any business, any condominium or apartment, community, planned community, etc., they can be hubs for being and contribute towards food sustainability, energy sustainability, just creating a beautiful environment that people can enjoy and live in and work in and play in. So at the senior center, even though it's an older building and campus, we're trying very hard to make it beautiful and enjoyable for people. And then we've also expanded the amount of programming here at the center. When I got to the center 2 years ago, we had 32 different types of programs. We have now 44 different classes, and that is based on what the seniors want to see and experience here. So I think I mentioned earlier, David, you know, things like brain exercises, learning how to use your Macintosh and other Android devices.
Where do I sign up?
Yeah, and that's what people are wanting, so
yeah.
We do have that. Along with all the cultural dances, the playing of instruments that people didn't have the time when they were working.
Right.
Now they are able to enjoy. We have a veterans club that basically they talk story, because a lot of veterans, you know, they come back.
That's great.
Yes. Very.
I think I need to spend a lot more time at the senior centers when I'm there. As a participant.
I have a question. With all of these programs, is there a residential, a term of residence that's required before people can take advantage of all of this amazing stuff? Because I would imagine
the senior center I'm with, it's based on if you are at least a part-time resident here on Oahu. So that's
And what makes you a part-time resident? What's the qualification?
I'll have to get back to you on that. I have no idea. But, you know, we have all these.
Hopefully that's 60 days a year.
Maybe. I don't know. I'll have to ask. There is a one of our instructors, because we have over 88 instructors and assistant instructors that donate their time. That's how we're able to afford all this programming, because people have come forward and said, you know, I can teach this and this. And we're just very fortunate that people have come forward to do that. And we have, you know,
I think they do it because they love you, Susie, and they
no,
want to.
They love the
You're the negotiator.
I'm just a part of it. I'm just a part of it. But I do have a lot of resources or contacts that once the evaluation comes in, we have four sets of 10-week classes, and the seniors evaluate the class but also suggest new classes. When they suggest new classes, then I can call people. Hey, can you please help us with this new ping pong? I haven't found anyone for Zumba and ping pong, but everything else I have been able to. Yeah. So
yeah, Hawaii has an interesting balance, you know, because they've got the locals who have lived there all their lives, and then you've got all these tourists. And you know, I've taken my fair share of Uber cabs, and I usually get a local, and they usually tell me, you know, I like to ask people questions, and there's a lot of apathy in the locals. I mean, very few of them vote because they feel like that the tourists and the corporations and their beautiful hillsides are being scarred with all this development. Yeah. They just don't feel like they're a part of the process. Can you address that?
I think that is a feeling, and that's I think it's important. You know, when I was in the legislature, I had many people volunteer in my office, because they could see another part of it. They can see that some of the issues that seem so simple, straightforward, something that no one would have any objection to, I would surprise myself, have objection to.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see all the different viewpoints on different issues, and it is a very difficult situation to be in as the elected official. If you can just imagine yourself in a room with, it doesn't matter how many people there are, it could be 5 people to 1 million people, you'd have 5 different issues that are top priority from those 5 people in the group to 1 million different priorities of the people in another group.
It all depends on whose ox is getting gored, so to speak, how it affects them, the money trail for them. You know, before I left, there was...
I think most of my colleagues, though, if there is good communication where the people that are very passionate about this, and most of them are not corporations, they're individuals, or collectively people have formed groups to educate their elected officials. That is important, but it's not easy. You will need to be able to go to the various hearings. And now, since there was a group of us that went paperless, we were the first Senate, or actually legislative body, to go paperless in the nation. Mm-hmm. At least people now can submit their testimony electronically. They wouldn't necessarily have to all be there. Mm. Although the personal touch is always important, making the phone call. Yeah. You know, sending postcards, mail, letters, etc. But we have created the ability for people who cannot get to the legislature to still participate. So there are different parameters.
Right.
But yes, I think with anything, you want to be as transparent as possible. And when people are in touch and take the time to speak or want to meet, I try my best to do so. I just need to tell you, even though I'm out of office, my count for emails on my personal email is up to 18,000 emails. I can't get through it. I try to answer every single one, but that still means I'm putting in 20-hour days, even though I'm not in the lid, you know, and I'm the head of the senior center. I still actually meet with people literally on a daily basis when I'm not at the center. So I think folks need to understand that part. And the more you do respond, then the more people, you know, contact you, because they know or have heard that so-and-so elected official, you know, will make return your cause or will take the time. So,
well, believe it or not, we have run out of time. Time sure flies when we're having fun. So how can someone get a hold of you if you're not getting enough emails and you want more?
Well, my private email is Susie, S-U-S-I-E, Chen, C-H-U-N, Oakland, O-A-K-L-A-N-D, at gmail.com. And I guess that's one way to communicate. If you really need to get in touch with me, I don't know if I should give my personal email.
No, you're too busy.
I mean, personal cell phone.
No.
I do.
Let him email you first. I won't do that to you. Adrian, how do we get a hold of you?
Or they can get in touch with you, and then you can you can communicate with me.
Yes.
Okay, so it's Adrian at thecaregiverspace.org. And my name is Adrienne. At thecaregiverspace.org.
And mine is simple, caregiverdave.com. And we have free gifts for you, and we have burnout quiz. We have a free download of my first book. So thank you, everybody, for coming on the show. And we will see you next week, same time, same channel. So goodbye.
And I just need to say thank you to both of you and all the caregivers in our nation.
Thank you
Susie. So much. Thank you. God bless.
Thanks for your
work. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani.